Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You know what, guys? Hearing what Pedro said, hearing what the NHL is proposing to come back, knowing how close that the NBA is to launching their idea of going to Orlando and completing their regular season and jumping right into playoffs, I think at this point it's pretty clear that we're going to get all of these sports. When and in which form, I really don't know, but I would be stunned at this point that if we get to anything that doesn't include a summer with the NBA, with the NHL, and with Major League Baseball, all of these are going to come back in one form or another. I'm convinced of it more now than I ever have been before.
Yeah, and that's the thing I continue to keep saying, that it's coming. It's just a matter of when, and the timing has to be right, but it's coming. And the CDC, the doctors, they have to sign off on things. We sit around and we think about the presidents of these universities, the athletic directors. Yeah, it's cool, but they don't have the final say. The government's going to have the final say along with the doctors when it is safe to resume playing sports.
Well, I you know, it's interesting when you really watch the timeline, right? And there are certain things that we know that have been experimented with that works when it comes to individual sports. As you guys remember at the very beginning, the first thing that we had was tennis on a private property, isolated, people wearing masks, no one touching. It was like, okay, this is what it would look like. Then you start to see the baseball happen in Korea. Then you started to see things happening back in the United States again with the UFC. I just watched professional bull riding again. People are figuring out, this is how we can do sports. We need property that we can keep quarantined off from fans who may, you know, even come with masks, but you're still not allowed in yet. And so we need private property so you can't even get close to where the athletes are. And then you need to make sure everyone that's involved are either practicing social distancing when they can, and when they can't, they're wearing the masks. Now, when you get to comes to the major sports that we're talking about, the NFL, baseball, blah, 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 obviously proximity is going to be an issue. But some of the things that won't be an issue are things that we learned early on from tennis and bull wrestling and UFC, and that is if you can get these athletes on property that fans can't get to, and you can make sure that those who are involved can get their temperatures checked, and that they're wearing their mask, and that they're practicing social distancing when possible, that's the foundation. That's the groundwork. And we've proven that that can be accomplished. Now comes step two. How do we get the athletes who have to interact more closely together to perform and still be safe?
And I don't think any athletes out there, to be honest with you, most of them, you know, it's probably a handful of guys, a little bit more, that are significantly worried about the health risk. But for the majority of them, yes, it's in the back of their mind, but I think that they are leaning more toward getting the clearance from the doctors and the professionals and the scientists in terms of continuing to play. Plus, they're athletes. This is what they want to do. Their bodies are itching to get out there and compete. So with all that being said, as you can continue to see, they're forcing the issue. The NBA players are forcing the issue to get back out on the court. This is why you don't hear the NBA having any type of resistance. They're trying to work with the players and moving things forward.
Well, I think, you know, going back to baseball for a second, and I know that baseball has a long history of labor problems and that their union is incredibly powerful and that they typically get what they want. And I'm aware of that and I understand the history of it. But I think we're in an entirely different time. I know that they're arguing over money right now. And I know that they're arguing over some logistical issues as well. But I just cannot come up with a scenario where the players decide we're not going to go back and play because you're not giving me what I think is a fair share of the money that is available. The look of that is so bad. And look, I'm the baseball guy on this show, right? I'm the guy that is the baseball guy. I love it. I understand all of the things about the labor, but the thing that we've heard for years and years, oh, if they do blank, it's going to kill baseball. Oh, baseball is dying. And I've always looked at it and said, no, it's not true. If you go to a baseball game, you do see kids. And I know that the games are long, but people watch them and the numbers, the ratings aren't great, but people are still turning it on. The regional television and the games that support those networks are an incredibly important part. If they don't go because of money, that look will last a long, long time, far more than the steroids, far more than the strike back in 94. And I think the players know that. So they're fighting like hell right now to make sure that they can cut the best deal that they can. But when it comes down to it, the decision to play or not, as long as the medicals are in place, as long as the logistics are in place, they're not going to say no because Mike Trout has to take a significant pay cut. That's not going to be the reason they don't play. I still think that they get back out there, and I think it happens probably sooner than later.
Yeah, you're right, Travis. It's not a good look. It's not a good look, but you certainly understand where they're coming from.
Sure.
And that's what makes it so tricky, because anytime you have millionaires and billionaires squabbling over money when the country is going through an unemployment era that, you know, rivals the Great Depression, no one looks good. No one looks good. But at the same time, the players' unions got to figure out a way to find another argument to make to disguise the conversation about money. And I know that sounds nefarious, and perhaps it is, but the marketing PR side of my brain is saying you can push back with a you know, sort of a straw man argument, but you shouldn't push back with the truth because people don't want to hear it. And that's just the way you play politics. That's the way you win the PR war. That's why they call it spin. You know, you can characterize your opposition any way you want to. But if you're being truthful, you're going to lose in the arena of public opinion.
Key, take me through it. If you let's just say football was in this situation, and all of a sudden there was a proposal on the table where you were scheduled to make a whole bunch of money, and now you're scheduled to make a whole lot less than that. You're not going to play. You're going to say I'm not going to do it.
Not if you're taking me from 40 million down to 5. Ain't going to happen. Just not going to happen. You're not going to do me like that to put money in your pocket. I'm not going to do that. I don't blame Mike Trout. You trying to go from 40 million to 5. Like, man, come on, man, stop. Might as well not even play.
Let's be clear about something. Mike Trout is not saying he won't do it. They used Mike Trout's contract as an example. The way that they're going to cut guys.
So let's be clear about it.
Yeah.
Chances are there's not going to be very many players that are willing to take that discount. That's why it's a major pushback. They didn't come to me and say, would you take 25% less? Would you take 30% less? They came to me and said 95% less.
It's 80. But your point is a good
80,
one.
80, yeah, 95, 80, whatever the math comes to. 80,
here's what it is.
Not 25.
Here's the breakdown. So basically they're going to tier this, that the less money you make, the more of your salary you get. If you make $1 million or less, you're going to make 72.5% of your money. If you make $1 million to $5 million, you get 50 cents on the dollar. $5 million to 10, 40%. $10 million to 20, 30%. And then for the really highly paid guys, $20 million and up, you would get paid at 20% of that rate. So Mike Trout, who is scheduled to make $38 million under this scenario, would make about 6.
But the reason I'm making $38 million is because I was the most dominant player for however long I've been at my position or in Major League Baseball. So now you want to punish me for being, after you reward me for being the guy. For being the guy, now you want to come to me. You didn't come to me and say, would you take 30, 25, somewhere in that range? You said 80-something percent, man. That nobody's going to do that, and no player is going to do that in no sport.
Just like Bernie Sanders as commissioner.
But okay, here's the thing. First of all, it's not 80% across the board. There's only so many guys in Mike Trout's category. Most of these guys are going to get most of their money.
But the owners ain't going to take 80% pay cut.
They already have.
Or are they?
They already have.
They already have. They're not collecting parking and hot dogs and beers and programs and t-shirts. They're getting crushed.
They're getting crushed, but they're not taking an 80% pay cut. They just getting crushed. They're not making the money because the games are being played. If the games aren't being played, then I shouldn't make money. But if I'm out on the diamond and I'm playing, or I'm on the court, or I'm on the field and I'm playing, I should be paid.
But that revenue is still not happening. That revenue still isn't happening theoretically, because even if it's just a small percentage of fans that are allowed in, and Dodger Stadium has been identified as being like the test dummy, if you will, and there are 36,000 people.
From the television ratings, and you're still getting paid from television revenue, I mean, and you're still getting paid from advertising. You're still making money as an owner. You're not making gate receipts, but you are making money as an owner. You're not taking an 80% haircut as an owner when the games are being played. If the games was being played, LZ, and they were on television and all of those sort of things, and you were telling me you're taking an 80% haircut when that is taking place, then I can understand that. But I can't understand how, when the games are being played, I'm out there playing the games, you want me to take an 80% haircut.
Now, the baseball union has never done this because they are incredibly steadfast. When they make a decision, they really ride it out at any cost. They have never shown any indication that they're willing to compromise on some of these things. But if the NHL is back, if the NBA is back, if the NFL is getting ready to open up their training camps and their exhibition season and start their regular season, and the baseball guys are over there arguing about dollars and cents, they can't do that. They have to play. If everyone else is going, they can't be the guys on the sidelines saying, yeah, well, we can't figure out how to carve up this money. It would be a devastatingly bad decision for the players' union not to do that.
They're going to figure out how to carve it up. It's going to get carved up. And the numbers ain't going to be 80. What we see right now isn't going to be the end result by no stretch of the imagination. Travis, sit tight for a minute on your seat. Think about what you're saying. I don't care if it's nothing but 25 or 30 guys in that level. You're asking somebody to take 80% of a pay cut, okay, and still do his job that you paid him to do, when you as the owner is still making money.
Key, I hear you. You're still making money, but you're not made. When I decided to pay you $38 million, that was predicated on me having a certain amount of revenue on my own, so I'm going to chip you off the $38 million. Now my revenue has been cut by 50%,
60%, 80%. I don't need you to chip me off 38. What I need you to do is come to the right percentage, because the right percentage is certainly not 80-plus percent.
So your question is, what is the percentage that is fair based upon the revenue that will be available?
Basically, if you want to phrase it that way, yeah. What is that? Because you say, well, the owners aren't making any money. There's no games being played. The doors are locked out. I mean, there's nothing there. But
they're going to play.
Money, if we start back up, no, but I mean fan gate receipts, concessions. You're not making money in the stadium, but you are going to make money in other avenues. So if I take an 80% reduction, what are you taking? What's your real reduction?
I'm not saying it's fair. I'm not saying that it's going to make a ton of sense, but I'm saying they're going to have to give a little bit because they have to play, and I think they will. I think that everything is indicating that all these leagues are getting ready to go. The NHL made the announcement yesterday. 24 of their 31 teams are going to come back. They're going to start a little tournament inside a tournament. We've got all of the NBA facilities that are getting ready to open up. We're talking about Disney World in Vegas. That it just seems that everything is online to go. Baseball is not going to be the one team that's left behind. They're going to play. I cannot see a scenario where they decide not to do it. John Ireland is going to join us next. He's going to come in and recap my stunning victory on Saturday afternoon. That's straight ahead on the morning show at 7:10 ESPN. You know what? Maybe I should let John bring this one back in from break, because, John, you are going to be with Key and LZ before too long after another thorough drubbing on Saturday afternoon out at Black Gold. 5-3 was the final match score. What do you have to say for yourself?
I humbly accept my beating, Travis. I hung with you for 10 holes. Basically, was tied after 10 holes. And then my driver left me. It went on a vacation. And you dialed in. The one thing that I will say is I don't feel as bad as I probably would have otherwise, because you shot 37 on the back. it's par 36 and you shot 37. That is, I was never going to shoot 37. So thank you for saving me the embarrassment of you know, just gacking the match all over the place by diving in.
It was much easier to dial in when you kept hitting it halfway up the side of the mountain. That it makes it a little easier to put your foot on the throat.
Amen. But it was fun. You played well. I, you know, I was thinking that we got to see a lot of people from the station, and I hadn't seen anybody from the station. So all in, you know, and that's like kind of the world we're living in now, is nobody has seen anybody. And your victory was well deserved. I basically, in football parlance, I showed up for a half. You know, I basically played a competitive first half, and then Travis went 49ers Jerry Rice style to my John Elway Broncos and hammered me in the second half.
Well, as long as you were social distancing away from everybody, I feel good.
Well, the key, you know what I was doing? I was socially distancing away from the fairway. I just kept hitting my ball like Travis said. We were finding gas lines. That one time I hit it into a gas line. Another time we found a ball in like the side of an anthill. It was, by the way, Trav, one thing you did not get enough credit for, because it kind of got lost in the match. I hope somebody got a picture. Travis came within, what do you think, Travis? If 3-4 inches of your first hole in one?
Yeah, it was close. I would say it was about 8 inches or so. It was
it was closer than that.
Was it closer than that?
It was absolutely a kick in, and that I was kind of hoping that would have given us a real story had that gone in, and it almost did.
LZ started trolling me on the first hole. The second I hit that bad drive after Amanda whammied me on the first hole, LZ's on social media rooting against me. So
I was not rooting against you. First of all, Travis,
I saw a supportive LZ tweet.
Yes, I supported you publicly. Privately, like MJ, I was saying stuff behind your back. But publicly, I was very supportive.
Hey, before, and we can get back to this if you want, because I deserve to get heavily hammered over this. But I was listening to you guys in the segment before, and I could not agree more with Keyshawn. I couldn't tell Travis and LZ if you were making the other argument, just to make the argument, if you really feel that baseball players should take an 80% cut. But Key's right, and this is the one point I didn't hear anybody make. The owners, a basic assumption of a business, and Key has owned a lot of businesses, and maybe this is why he sees this the way I do, is you assume all the risk. All right, you assume all the risk. I will pay you guys, like, we all get paid a certain salary to come in and do the show. Or if you own a restaurant, you pay your staff a certain amount of money to do the show. If the restaurant goes really, really well, or if the business goes really, really well, you don't see the employees coming back to the owner and saying, hey, you had an unbelievable year, where's mine? So why, in the case of the owners being hit with this pandemic, and of course nobody saw it coming, should the players take an 80% cut?
Well,
the players
first
didn't
of all,
ask for an 80% increase, Travis, when they were having their years when their franchises grew by $100 million.
No, I hear what you're saying. But first of all, it's not an 80% cut across the board. There's a very small group of people that would be cut like this. And I understand your point. It's a good one. My point is that you can't have the NBA come back. You can't have the NHL come back. You can't have football get ready to launch its season, and they're holding training camp and getting ready for an exhibition season and a regular season. And then you've got the baseball guys over there arguing about money, because that is the most baseball thing ever. Baseball would look ridiculous if everyone else is back and they're arguing over money. Are the owners lying about their revenues? Very, very likely that they are. Is it an unfair deal for the players? Yeah, an 80% cut is unfair, but if everyone else is back online and you're arguing over money, that is a devastatingly bad look.
The owners aren't going to be able to lie over the money, because the books are going to be open. We get that. But the rationale to come to the players, and the thought process to come to the players and put this proposal together to dock the larger guys at a significant rate is ridiculous, and it'll never get passed. So it was a waste of conversation and a waste of time. Had they gone to them, Ireland, and said 25-30%, guys would say okay. 35%, guys would go okay, I understand, but you said 80%. Well, won't you take the other $5 million too then, man, and I'll just play for free.
You know, I first of all, Key, I couldn't agree with you more about this being somewhat of a wasted conversation and that it'll never pass. I agree with you. It's a negotiating tactic. But also, It doesn't sit right with me that the best players, the Mike Trouts and the Mookie Betts, and you know, believe it or not, the Blake Snells. Blake Snell made a mistake, and how he came out and argued this. But the guys who are playing at the top of the league are being asked to take the biggest cuts just because they make the most money. Can you imagine in the NBA if somebody came after like the top NBA guys and said, you guys take an 80% cut? It would never fly. I just think the owners need to live up to the deal they cut in March, which was, look, we'll give everybody a prorated portion of their salary and let's play ball. And Travis, yeah. I agree with you. If the billionaires can't make a deal with the millionaires and all the other sports come back, it'll be a black eye on baseball that they may never get past.
John, what do you think of the idea?
The one aspect of this conversation, too, that I think the owners are maybe, I don't know definitively, haven't done the reporting on it, but maybe to be thinking about in terms of the overall math is that generally speaking, for owners, regardless of the sport, the team is not their primary source of revenue.
Right.
So they may be looking at how can I recoup money that I've lost in my major businesses? This is the place where I can do that. And they're trying to dip into Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, totally agree.
John, what do you think of the format that the NHL has proposed where they're going to let 24 of their 31 teams in and then do kind of two simultaneously tournaments from the top four in each division and then you have the bottom eight in each conference, and then they figure it out from there. Do you like the idea of just basically opening up the gates and virtually letting every team in the league into a playoff format?
Well, I don't know, Trey. It's one of those things you won't know until you see it. I think the NBA obviously is making that decision this week. They have their Board of Governors meetings on Friday. And I've heard really good arguments that you just bring back the playoff teams. And I've heard other arguments that you do something like a playoff plus, where you bring back like teams that like New Orleans and Portland who would have a chance. And I've heard bring everybody back, and I've heard good arguments on all three fronts. It's tricky. I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer. We're in uncharted waters here. So to get back to your question about the NHL, I remember when the NBA came up with that goofy all-star game idea this year, and we all thought, what is that going to look like? That might be terrible. And it was great. It was it led to this like unbelievably competitive fourth quarter where everybody played defense. I kind of look at the NHL plan like that. Maybe it'll be great. I'm in favor of anything that gets us the games back. I'm sick of watching old games, and I'm sick of watching Korean baseball at 1:30 in the morning. So, you know, whatever gets John, the games back, that's what I want.
John?
No, that's
there's
true.
There's professional bull riding as well, John. That is also an option I watched this weekend.
I'm watching old golf tournaments, not even current golf tournaments. That's how bad it's become.
Did you watch any of the Tiger, Phil, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady action?
Well, didn't Tom Brady on those first seven holes, Travis, remind you of me?
Other than your pants didn't split, yes.
Yeah, he was playing a lot like I did against you. Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was a good diversion. It goes to show you how good guys like Tiger and Phil are. You know, it's... you know, because those guys, the quarterbacks who are both, you know, lower. And by the way, speaking of handicaps, Trav, you've always said that you don't really keep an active handicap, but if you did, you'd probably be around an 8 to 10. You're more of a 5 to 7.
I don't know about that.
You're better now.
What are you?
Start keeping your numbers. 11.3.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's set this up right now. That if we do this again next spring. What are we talking about? Are we talking one side?
Hold on. We're not doing nothing next spring. When are you paying off your debt that you owe for the show?
Well,
we won't be doing no damn fast tracks either.
Okay, fair enough. It's your show. We're going to do what you guys want. But Trav, I'm out of the. I'm in the clear now because I had to do the Kamenetsky dance party hoedown last night, which is why I didn't. Which is why I didn't want to do it this week. But you want to do it next week?
Sure. Well, you know what? Let me think, because I need to figure out
You and I will get a text going today, and you guys will have an answer for you tomorrow or the next day. But it'll be paid off, Trav. You want to say? I'll guarantee I'll pay it off in the next 3 weeks.
Yes, done deal.
Okay,
done deal.
Okay.
That is a done deal. How many shots would you feel comfortable taking from me, John? How many do you want?
I've got a better idea, I think.
Okay.
Taking a page from the Brady Manning thing.
Ooh.
Teams.
Okay.
So you and I, you're a little better than me. Let's find two other willing participants from the station. It can be guys who just are – it can be Key and LZ. It could be Mason who says he wants to learn how to play golf. It can be Bergman who thinks he can golf.
I'll take Tommy.
Bergman's on my list. He can't come.
Okay. I'm with Key on that. Tommy Lamb played very well, but Tommy isn't an on-air guy. We could each take a Kamenetsky. We'll come up with a format.
All right.
But we're not playing again for a year. So the first thing we need to do is I got to serve my sentence. So
we will find the day.
So let's get trapped. Let's make that a priority over the next 48 hours to find a day, and we'll go from there.
You got it. All right, John. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Congratulations on your victory. Well earned.
Thank you.
All right, boys. Have a great day.
You got it. Which one of you two guys want to be my partner? I'm going to let you think about that, and I want an answer when we come back on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
You know what, Key? You know what? I had forgotten that Greg Bergman was on your list. I'm glad you reminded me of that. That was a topic during our round last weekend, how nervous and frightened Greg was when he tried to come on and defend himself. That he's still on the list makes me very happy.
Oh, yeah. No, he's on the list. He's permanently on the list. So he's, you know, and if he doesn't, no shame on him.
Well, he's going to be the one calling you to help you hook up your Comrex. So I told him to give you a little jingle. So that should be fun.
Chris is handling it. Otherwise, I'll just be sitting on my cell phone doing the show.
It was kind of universally understood when we were playing golf that afternoon that Greg's appearance on the show made things far worse as opposed to helping himself.
Yeah, he doesn't get it. But he will. He'll soon learn. Oh, well, move along.
Have you had the chance to shut him out yet when he asked you for something? Has that happened yet?
No, he's probably going to send a man to my way.
All right, so when does Jalen Ramsey get done, Key? When does Jalen Ramsey's deal? The Rams sent two first-round picks to Jacksonville to get Jalen Ramsey. He's one of the best in the business at that position, but it feels like he's got the Rams over a barrel a little bit here. This is a guy that it wants a new deal. Everybody knew he wants a new deal. You sent two first-round picks to get him without a deal in place. Everybody's talking nice right now, saying that it's going to get done, and they're working towards a deal. But if I'm Jalen Ramsey, I feel like I got a pretty big sledgehammer in my hands.
You do. So the deal will probably get done pre-training camp or at some point during training camp, but he will not start the new season without a deal on the table. He won't start a new season without a deal on the table, that's for sure. Because what happens is they've already had some communication. So there's this expectation by him that something's going to be done. And if they go back on those expectations, then you open it up something that you don't want to be a part of when you've gotten two number one picks that you've surrendered to bring a talent to your football club to help the defense. The fact that you've already addressed it and said, this is what you're going to do, and then you go back on that, it's going to create problems for him. So I look for it to be done at some point, either before training camp or during training camp.
Does it land about where it would have landed anyway, that if they had negotiated this deal before the trade took place? I mean, it's not like all of a sudden because he's got them in a disadvantage or a disadvantageous position that he could ask for quarterback money. He's still going to get about what the best corner gets, right? Give or take a couple of million bucks. It's not like he can blow it out of the water.
Well, he will blow it out of the water in terms of structure. You know, he may be able to get, I don't know what the average number are. I think it's around $15 million. Let's say that they decide to make it $17.5 million to an $18 million number. That's blowing it out of the water. Then they guarantee 85% of his money, and out of the 85% of the total contract, let's say that 80% is due in the first the first 19 months. That's blowing it out of the water. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it could be structured to blow it out of the water. It doesn't have to be total compensation. It could be percentage of compensation, guarantees, all of the little things that certainly will get a job, get a deal done. Some teams don't operate where they play games with you. The Rams don't seem like the type of organization that sneeze. When they want to get a deal done with somebody, they usually get it done and they take care of their guys. When you go back to whether it was Brandon Cooks, whether it was Tavon Austin, whether it was Ty Gurley, Jared Goff, Robert Woods, any of these guys that they address with their contract issues, they just get it done. Look at the Whitworth. Whitworth just got it done. Wasn't no big hiccups. And I think that that is the way that you approach things. And Les Snead's been on with us before and talked about it. You reward the player. You reward him. You don't play with him and try to lowball him and play games. You take care of business and you get it done and you won't have any problems. Now, when they aren't any good anymore, that's a different story.
So how is that approach different than what Dallas is doing with Dak Prescott?
Because it seems well, they didn't like give up anything to get Dak. Dak didn't cost them two first-rounders.
No, but what I mean is that this notion of you reward a player that does well for you, you don't try to lowball them, you get it done.
Well, they've obviously have already extended a very handsome offer to him. Our own Dan Graziano was just on the show the last 30 minutes explaining that they've extended a contract offer to him. That it may not be what he wants today, and it may not be what they want to give him today. But there is a contract that is on the table. They have rewarded him. It's there. Now it's about negotiating the fine print. Again, I can give you $75 million in the fifth year if it makes you happy. Because at the end of the day, you ain't going to never see it. But if it's good for your newspaper clipping and for you to frame it and put over your desk at your office, so be it. You ain't never going to see that money, so it doesn't really matter. That report that was out that he turned down $45 million in 50 years, that ain't nothing but something to talk about. That's giving us something during a pandemic to discuss. The real money is in the first 3 years, just like it is in every single deal that we do. There's this notion that's out there, and LZ, you're a student. You're smart. You can follow it. There's this notion out there that the NFL players' money is not guaranteed. That's not true. If you look at the NBA, the NBA stopped going out long distance on contracts. Everything was short, sweet, and guaranteed. The NFL is still short, sweet, and guaranteed. That's why it's important. What's the guaranteed money in the first 3 years of a long-term deal? Because the long-term deal is just because of the salary cap situation. Those guys will never get to that money. You know, you look at these deals where guys are averaging $20 million a year at the receiver position. In the first 3 years, it's $60, $65, $70 million a year. That's the guarantee. Now, you take it to the NBA and you look at some guys' deals, or three-year, four-year deals, that's the guaranteed money. I ain't looking at the number because, obviously, the revenue stream is different in the NBA than it is in the NFL, but the guaranteed portion and the length of the deals are all the same.
Why the charade then?
Yeah.
Why all the theater?
It's not a charade. It's more about the salary cap. Like, if you look at Kirk Cousins' deal, right? Kirk Cousins did a 3 and a 2. That's 5. Those numbers, if I'm, let me see. His first deal was what, $90 million over 3? Was that his first deal?
Like for the Vikings?
Something. Yeah, 90 something.
It was the $84 million guaranteed. That's the part I remember about it.
Yeah, it was all fully guaranteed, but he only did a 3-year deal.
Right.
He did a 3-year deal at 84 fully guaranteed. Now he just did a 2-year deal again at something like 60 guaranteed, right? Put those numbers together and put those years together. That's 5 years, $140 million. That's fully guaranteed. They could have gave him a 5-year deal at 140 fully guaranteed, but they didn't want to do that. They wanted to go shorter to get back to the marketplace, similar to what Dak Prescott is trying to do. He's trying to go short to get back to the marketplace. Now, does it make sense to you?
Everything you're saying makes sense, but it's just that what doesn't make sense is why what you've explained hasn't happened. We'll continue the conversation. There's more to it because what you're saying makes perfect sense, but why it hasn't happened still doesn't. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Okay, Keith, so all the reasons you gave for
why Dak Prescott's contract is going to be structured a certain way, that you could offer him, you know, $11 bajillion in the fifth year. It doesn't matter because you're going to cut him or restructure it in any way. It's for the agent. I got that. I get that he's next, so he gets a little more than the next guy. I got that. I get that he's the next, like you were saying with Les Snead, you don't want to, you know, hold the guy up just because you want to try to squeeze him for a couple million. I get all of these things. All of the structure points are good ones. The one that I still can't get to is, if it's as easy as all of that, if everybody understands the maneuvering that both sides are doing, why isn't it done?
Because it's a lot of times these things are structure and language and getting it done. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to be done. Sometimes you are in a hurry, then you stop and you fail, pause, you wait, you just chill, because there's a date and it's July 15th. Derek Graziano said it. It's July 15th. That is the date. The games aren't played until September. Now, he can still sign the franchise tag, okay, and play on the $31 million and work to get a deal done at the end of the season if he chooses to do so. He may just say, you know what, I'm going to play for the $31 million and bump it. I'll play for the $31 million. The Cowboys will say, okay, because there may be something in that first 2 years. Maybe they want 100% of the money guaranteed, 100 and whatever it is, 40 million guaranteed, and they're saying, "No, we won't do that. We only want to give you 90 million guaranteed." So, or we only want to give you 90 million in the first 12 months instead of the entire thing, you know. Or maybe they want a fourth year fully guaranteed, and the Cowboys are only willing to go 3 years fully guaranteed. It's all about the structure of the deal. These things will, you can get a deal done. I can talk to you on the 14th at midnight and get a deal done at 8 o'clock in the morning on the 15th. And we can sign off and you can come to training camp. It's not that difficult. What's happening is it's intriguing. It's a story. We don't have anything else to talk about. So we are talking about it on a constant basis and worried about it on a constant basis when the parties that are in play, they're not worried about it because they know that it's going to get done.
I disagree with your summation of the situation in the sense of
how you going to talk with me on something that I'm telling you.
I disagree with the notion that you're characterizing this as the conversation we're having because there aren't sports being played because of the pandemic, when we know we've been talking about this for over a year prior to the pandemic. So this isn't just a conversation because we have nothing else to talk about. This is a conversation because we see this contemporaries. We're talking about this because we've seen this contemporaries. We're talking about this because we've seen its contemporaries actually get signed and get the deal done. And we just assumed he was going to be next. That's the reason why we're talking about it.
Different organizations negotiate differently. Different organizations negotiate differently. Some people are willing to give you things that other organizations and general managers and front office personnel, there used to be a thing called a void. Many years ago, voided contracts. Voids. Yep. I was in one with the New York Jets. New York Jets refused to do a voided contract when everybody else behind me got voided deals. They were able to void out in X amount of years. They refused to budge on a void. They just have never done it. They don't want to do it. They're not setting the precedent. Yada, 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 yada. At the end of the day, I signed a six-year deal that voided in four anyway because I got traded. So you gave me the void by moving me because I outperformed the first 3 years of my deal. So when you look at it, I could have gone to the Jacksonville Jaguars at the number two slot. They would have gave me a void with no problem. Everybody negotiates different. Les Snead and the Los Angeles Rams have no problem paying players when their time is up. They take care of them, sometimes earlier, sometimes not so early. That's just the way that they do their business. The Dallas Cowboys.
Don't you run the risk, though, Key? Don't you run the risk, though, if you're the Cowboys, of waiting? Because to your point, that you've said, look, I could wait till midnight the day before and we could knock this out in a couple of hours. And I believe that to be true. You know, but I get it. The deadline spur action. That's just one of the golden tenets of contract negotiation. Until we get close to the deadline, everybody's going to be a little slow to move in their proposals. I understand that. But
don't you run the risk of just life intervening, feelings getting involved, potential injuries? And I know that the odds of these things are low, but if I'm Dak, I'd rather have this done than not have it done. If I'm Jerry Jones, I'd rather have this done than not have it done. If the general structure and the general dollars are pretty much understood what they're going to be, why am I running this out into the 11th hour? This is the part that I keep coming back to. Because, look, I bet you right now, Key, you could write the contract right now and say, this is what Dak Prescott will get, and you're going to be right within 10%, right? You're going to be really close to what it ends up being. Dak Prescott knows that. Jerry Jones knows that. And yet here we are, and we're still getting closer and closer to that July 15th deadline without having anything done. Why wait?
One of the reasons that it's not that you wait. You're trying to negotiate certain things within the deal. You don't just give him what – you don't have to do anything to July 15th. What's the rush? I don't understand what the rush is.
There's no rush, Key.
He's not missing anything.
This is the curiosity, all right? When Jared Goff got signed and Carson Wentz got signed, the natural narrative of the conversation was Dak. And we've been stuck there ever since. So it's not that anyone is asking about the rush. It's that just like Jared Goff wanted certain provisions in his contract and Carson Wentz wanted certain provisions in his contract, the reality is that they got it done. And here we are more than a year later, you're still hearing this conversation with Dak, which to me makes you wonder if they don't feel about Dak the way that the Rams and the Eagles feel about their QBs.
That's not true, though. That's a narrative that people are trying to set out there. That's not true. And I'm not going to allow you on this show with us to make yourself look like that. That's not true. They offered this man a contract.
What did I say was not true?
Just because the Rams got a deal done, Jared Goff may have not been asking for the same provisions in his deal that Dak Prescott may be asking for.
I understand.
It doesn't mean that they don't love him or like him because the deal's not done. Doesn't mean that. Does not mean that. Did they not like Aaron Donald, the Rams? Because the Rams, we talked about Aaron Donald deal for a year and a half. Does that mean the Rams didn't like Aaron Donald?
It certainly meant
It certainly meant when he
wasn't getting the deal done. I do.
I'm gonna talk to you, Travis, because
No, because you jumped all over me. The first thing I said to Les
and Raj
got all over me. The first thing I said was, "What's the problem?" Is that not true? That's the first thing I said. I'm very consistent when it comes to the discussion that if you have a player that you definitively know that you want to hang your franchise on and you try to get a negotiation, I'm asking, what's the problem? So I'm very consistent, Key. You're not going to mischaracterize what I said. When it comes to Dak Prescott, I'm asking the same question I asked of Aaron Donald. What's the problem?
There is no problem. LZ, it's negotiation.
There's more there.
Negotiation. No, it's not. Travis, I don't want you to make it seem like there's more there and they don't like him. That's not true.
No. That's not what I was saying. I'm saying that there's more to this conversation. There's more to the conversation, and I want to have the conversation, too, about the Pac-12 finally getting on board with the rest of the college football universe. Good news if you're an SC, an Oregon, and Arizona State fan. It looks like they're going to get their football act together. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.